You're listening to Gone Mobile, your input and output for all things .NET MAUI and mobile.
Welcome back to another Gone Mobile. Alan, what are we up to on this Friday?
Well, you're right into it because it's Friday, right?
Yeah, we gotta get going.
We are going to talk about offline battle tactics, and more specifically, I'm pretty sure you've got some war wounds here.
Yeah.
And this is a hot topic for me. This is like my bread and butter when we talk about a lot of MAUI / mobile stuff. So, but I love your war wound. I love when you go on a rant. So I want to hear it. I want to hear it. They all want to hear it. Everybody wants to hear this.
Surely you have one too. Like, who hurt you in this space?
Well, I'm in open source. You are too, actually, technically.
So. Yeah, I mean, everyone in open source has been hurt. So.
Okay, so a product?
I don't know. Or many. Just experience. Project, many. Experience. Okay.
I've seen some things that have caused my eyes to bleed. That's why I have gray hair. More than you for some reason.
It's coming in here. I don't like the beard is getting more gray than it when it started. I didn't used to sport it, but COVID, I was like, let's try. Why not?
Did you go like full out? I don't even remember.
Not that big. No, once it gets too long, it gets annoying. So I had to trim it back.
See, I'm French. I don't get hair. I only get hair on like right here, dead center, yeah. And that's it. That's it. At least I'm not going bald, but that's it. It just this one spot on my face, and it doesn't. Yeah.
So, speaking of hairy experiences,
yes, let's hear the rant.
So we're talking about. Did you say that already? We're talking about offline stuff. Yeah,
offline battle tactics, and then I added the scars point because I want to hear your rant.
I think you have. Yeah, I've probably told it a few times. Maybe others have heard it too. So when I have an app, right? Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. Okay, I've seen it.
I have an app. It's about pools. Yeah, if you have a swimming pool, it helps you figure out your chemistry and do that kind of thing. And one of the aspects of it is it stores logs, your like information, right? So if you do test your water, you can store like all the different numbers that you test with. You can store like when you do maintenance and expenses and all the different stuff. So anyway, the idea was, let's make this app. Let's have this data. I need a database. Okay. How do I want to make that work online? Because let's face it, like users of apps kind of, what are the chances that somebody's going to like go back up their data that's locally stored and then know how to restore it and like do the good thing of, you know, being smart about it and not come back to me like a year or two later and be like, I lost all my data. What do I do? Right. So got to have it stored online in the cloud. And that's what I decided the feature that I would make people pay for, which kind of makes this, you know, even hurt more because it's like, okay, now people are starting to pay for the app, a yearly subscription. And also we're ranting and scars, like if you ever have an app in the app store, if you've published one and you get reviews from people are the worst, like the reviews that you get. So like this pool app is meant to help you deal with your own chemistry. And if you go to the pool store, anyone who owns a pool knows, like the minute you step in the door of a pool store, you're not walking out with like spending less than $100. Just that's a good, you know, that'd be a good experience.
Yeah. Okay.
So they want you to come in and it's a whole, I won't get into that side of things. We could do an episode on pools one day. And it's a whole thing. And so this is helping you save money by not having to go bring your water into the store and test it and figure out what you need to do with it. So if you have a pool, you have a little bit of extra spending money usually, right? And so I charge $8, $7.99 US a year. And the amount of reviews never, you know, seems to go away that of people that are like, I'm not paying $8 a year for this thing to help run my pool, right? So I'm so scarred by app store reviews as well. It's terrible. So if you're going to like leave a review on an app, don't be whining about like the cost of it or something. People are working and building these things, right?
I feel like John's winding me up at the same time because he knows how I approach some of these things. Like
it's like open source development, right? Like you're spending your time and giving it away, and arguably it's even worse for OSS dev because you're not charging money for it.
Can you bleep out my saying?
Hold on, let me get the button ready. Okay, I'm ready.
Fork and fuck off.
So Anyway, I have the app. It has this feature. It does offline data. And when I built this originally back in the day, I built it with Xamarin. I built it with Xamarin Forms. Part of why I wanted to build it was a good experience of just like using the product and getting a better understanding, you know, how, what the customer experience is like, whatever. So I started looking into solutions. Like, how do I do offline data sync so that somebody can put something, you know, a database record in the thing and it gets to the cloud. And if they log in on another device, because I've been such a cross-platform user of mobile too, right? Like, I was an Android user for many years. I'm iOS, you know, I've come around and seen the light, and I've been iOS ever since. But I wanted it to work everywhere, and I wanted to be able to sign in on any platform with that account and get that data down. So I started looking at the options, and there wasn't a lot out there to begin with back in the day, but there was one.
There was not?
Well, there was some.
Firebase database?
No, that wasn't out back then. That wasn't around. I did this like a long time. Like, this app
what
is...
What year?
I want to say 2016, maybe? 2015? I don't know. If it was out, it was like early days, and I don't think they had all the different versions of what they offer for database stuff now, right?
All right. I know you went with the cool guy, though, because it was really SQLite. And
yeah, SQLite was there.
It's right at your lips. I'm waiting for you to say it.
There was a thing called Realm.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I think I knew about them from going, I think I went, one of the Google IOs that I went to, there was people from Realm, like, they're promoting it and passing out, like, I don't know, cups or something like that, like coffee stickers, who knows what it was.
The concept was cool.
Yeah.
It was an interesting ORM. The way it did its data persistence, and like, you had to be on the same thread. So
yeah.
I personally never used it. I used it with a couple companies that I went in and consulted with, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Nightmare, but not like yours. Yours.
The basic functionality was okay for what I needed. There was a few things that were probably in hindsight red flags. Well, definitely were. You know, one of the things was like, there wasn't an easy way to kind of capture a view of all of the data. So like, the way it worked was kind of on a per user basis, which was great in terms of the functionality I wanted, because I only wanted you to be able to access your own data, right?
Yep.
That's fine. Great. But one of the problems was like, it was hard to be able to kind of, as I found later, trying to migrate out of Realm, it was hard to like get everyone's data and like be able to back it up and migrate it over. It was very proprietary. You were stuck on their system, and you know, you had to do things their way. But the bigger problem was, so here's the thing that happened. I had this all working. It generally was okay. And then I went and I launched the app and put it on the App Store. And because I wrote this app and I partnered with a website and another company to do it, and you know, and that in hindsight was an excellent decision because it's been a great relationship. But we had users immediately, like a good amount of users, which is great. Good problem to have. Lots of traffic. We had, you know.
I just want to stop you and just so people that aren't, they don't get to see your face as you're describing this. You can almost see John amping up as he goes further into the story. It's quite entertaining.
It's been a while since I've relived this, so this is good.
Fiery. I love it. Let's go.
So you know, we get users and like starting to get people logging in and subscriptions, and you know, I'm starting to like monitor things. Like, yeah, okay, this is great. This is working. And then all of a sudden, you know, get like the first email or whatever from someone, be like, I can't log in. Oh, that's weird. Okay. Well, let's take a look. Oh, I can't log in now either. Well, it's working sometimes. Every 10th time I try, it seems like I get through, but it takes a while. And then after I finally log in, things are okay-ish. So long story short, the way that they had stuff set up, the login service was its own individual process thing. And it talked to the Realm service, and the Realm service itself was, I think, written in like C or something, and it seemed to be okay. But the login service was Node.js based, and like it just is, I didn't even have that much traffic. It immediately died out, and like it was like I was getting, you know, DDoS on the login service when I had maybe 5 or 10 people at a time, you know, trying to log in. So the whole thing just crawled to a halt, and I'm, you know, panicking because, like, this is the, hey, I'm ready to go. This is the moment. This is the release. And so, like, I start getting in contact with them, and I get in touch with some of their developers, and they're like, oh yeah, this is a problem. And I'm like, what do I do? And eventually, after like 2 days of just nonstop working, I had to rewrite the login service myself. And I could only do this because of the, you know, to be fair, the engineers at least were like holding my hand a bit in terms of, here's what, you know, the flow is expecting and how it hands off to the database service and all this kind of stuff, right? So they're like, you know, one option would be to rewrite this yourself so it was faster. It's like, this is your product, people. Come on. You should be doing this for me, like right now. But they didn't. And so I rewrote the whole thing. And I think I even did it in Node because of some reason that some thing they were using from it. But, and I'm like, how come I can make this work fast enough, but you can't? And I had to like set up all these different like reverse like Nginx proxy configs to get things routing to the right places, and like different endpoints were needing to be set up for each user and stuff like that. It was the most painful thing I have ever done, I think, from a developer perspective, and just having to do it quickly because I've got this onslaught of users and there's problems and nobody can get at the thing. So I eventually got it going again, but to the point where I'm like, I'm not comfortable making this my stack now. Like, I need to get off of this as soon as possible. And then that was a whole other process because, like I said, you couldn't easily query everyone's data. I think there was a way to do it. They had like an upcharge product, but like even all the stuff I went through, they're like, no, you'd have to buy that to, and it was like a lot of money, right? I'm like, I don't have that money right now. I'm like, I need to get my data out. So what I ended up doing is, I rewrote a different backend as well, right? On top of rewriting the login service, I had to like totally figure out, okay, what's my new strategy for offline data? And then I made the app, I put an update out that would kind of go like, okay, if you're launching the app, if you were a Realm user, you know, if you haven't been migrated over yet, go get all your data and then like send it up to the web service so that I can store it properly, because I couldn't get that user account's data outside of using their own client and product. And then I got it all moved over. And then I had to have this thing running for like a year, because over the course of time, as I was rebuilding the new backend, like I'm still using this thing and I'm getting thousands of users signing up, and not everybody opens the app to have that migration happen, like, you know, immediately, right? So I had this thing probably at least a year. I had this thing running on top of the other one and doing these migrations. And I only a year or two ago finally like totally tore the rest of every part of that updating migration piece out of the software. It was so painful. And I know things that like they've gotten, I think they were bought by Couchbase, right? Like I think like, yeah. Realm is still a thing. And I know they were adding like MAUI support and stuff.
No.
Wasn't it? It was Mongo, right?
Yeah, MongoDB.
Yeah, MongoDB. Yeah. Sorry, Couchbase is another product out there for similar stuff. So I will never use Realm again because of that experience alone. I don't know. Maybe they've gotten things under control and it works way better these days. I know one of the things I still didn't love about it, and I never did originally, was that you had to like subclass their types for your data objects and stuff. And so like just to use it required some infiltration into your code base that I don't love.
Is this where you started your, I must build it myself from that point on? Is that the,
you know, that might be the origin story.
Because you are like, you will avoid a dependency at absolute maximum cost.
Yeah. Like until you only realize, once. Like,
yeah, I'm not building this. Like this, I'm not building.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, a lot of people, so I did a lot of consulting back in early Xamarin, there was two companies that I saw actively use Realm and actively destroy themselves with it, right? Like, now they had other problems like bleeding, sure, through the tiers of, you know, the engineering process, right? So like your backend data going all the way through your UI, you know, there's reasons we don't do that stuff anymore. But, you know, I saw those and people generally trip and fall on their face, and that was just Realm.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go back to offline, I mean, offline is such a common thing in mobile, and the number of times I've seen companies fall on their face with that is tenfold.
Like, well, because it's not necessarily an easy problem to solve.
It definitely isn't. It definitely isn't. But what I tend to see is like with all engineers, right? I think maybe this comes as we're older. It's, you know, you want to build this abstract thing that you can reuse over and over right. and over again. And to be honest, once you start getting into like an enterprise database where, you know, you've got row level security, even column level security, like certain bits of data or views or whatever, syncing becomes nearly impossible on an abstract level, right? Like
yeah.
it really does. But people well, and, try to bend that wheel.
Well, and what does it mean? You know, I think like where it falls down. Yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like, how do you also define what it means to sync your data and how to handle conflicts? And like, this is all
gotten down that, right?
Yeah, right.
Resolving conflicts sometimes is a business decision, like whose data mm-hmm. is right. Maybe they both are. Maybe there's two audit histories. Who knows, right?
Right.
They try and put in these conflict resolution things into some of these over-engineered frameworks, and you end up doing more code trying to figure out how to resolve the conflict as opposed to that wins or they both go in and just do the business.
Yeah.
Right? And it gets even worse because these low-level mechanisms, you know, there's always, it's like OData. Have you ever used OData?
Yep.
Right? And you're like, oh, wow, this, at first you're like, this is pretty awesome. You know, I can filter,
mm-hmm.
I can query. And it's the same thing with GraphQL or graphical, whatever you want to call it. Right? You spend all that time, you come up with this great model, and then you spend more time, for all the time you saved for writing all these queries and stuff, now you spend trying to throttle them because people find complex ways to query your object model or
yeah.
ways to hack it or issue deletes or so you spend all that time that you just spent using that thing, you now have to secure it. You spend more time there, and security can be hard because then you lock somebody out and you're like, oops, yeah, right? And so your abstract thing that was all pretty is no longer pretty.
Yeah. So do you want to hear what I actually ended up moving to, like? And
yes.
part of the success in the simplicity of what I moved to is also due to the fact that I'm like, oh crap, I got to do this thing fast. Like, what's the easiest way I can do this that doesn't feel like it's going to, you know, paint me into a corner in the future? So, you know, I basically got to the point where I'm like, okay, well, I have like, my data is simple, at least for the app. It's logs, right? Like I have a, if you think of it from like a, see like a .NET and an object-oriented perspective, I have a base log type. So every log has a timestamp and is associated with a pool and has potentially like the current weather conditions attached to it. And then I have different types of logs, you know, that subclass that basically. And so like my table, I have pretty much two tables. I mean, I use Cosmos DB. So it's like it's SQL document, which there are pros and cons to having gone that way. Generally, it's been great. But the data part of it, yeah, really boils down to like, okay, I have logs, you're going and pools. Like you have a pool table, I guess, and a logs table. Well, pools are something you don't create that often. And so this is again like where you get into thinking about this. It's really building the solution for your business need, right? So pools don't change often. You basically set that up once, because I only really ever put a swimming pool into my house, you know, in my yard one time, right? Maybe I edit it, or who knows? It can change, but it's not going to be that often. So, you know, thinking about how to do that offline, it's like, well, it doesn't really matter too much, you know, as long as that kind of gets updated at some point. And then I'm creating new logs most of the time. Sometimes I'll edit them or sometimes I'll delete them, but most of the time it's creating new logs. And so I said, you know, for this case, I'm just going to say if when you're creating or editing something, either a pool or a log, you have to be online. If you're not online, it's going to air out and it's going to say, hey, check your connection and try again, right? Now, I have plans for, I have plans, and I don't know if I'll do them because it's been fine for basically trying to say, like, well, could I store those logs? Like, maybe not for a pool. Like, maybe a pool, you always have to be online. But maybe for adding a log, I could say, okay, I'll keep that cached offline and I'll send it up the next time your phone connects. And we'll deal with, you know, problems of conflicts in just a simple way of, there are no conflicts. You can't edit. You can only add a new log. Like, that's one way I could go with it, right? And then if you add a log in two places, well, they just both get added and you can go delete one later if you feel like you didn't want both of them. So I'm really just sending things up, right? So you have to be online to send things up. And then before you can send things up, you also have to like check with the server to say, do I have the latest set of information? And it's going to pull the latest information down before it sends stuff up. Not that there's really any conflicts there, but just so that you kind of, you make sure you've got things sorted out. So that's worked out pretty well. Like, I don't really have people complaining like, oh, I'm trying to save logs and I can't because I'm offline. It's like people are online when they try and save them. So it's been great.
And generally they're near their house anyways. Unless they've got like Wi-Fi from 20 years ago.
And that has been a thing. Like, people don't necessarily have Wi-Fi that reaches where they're logging from, but most people have, you know, cellular connections on their phones, right? So it's really not been an issue. Or what they'll do is they'll like put the information in and then make sure they're back in range of their Wi-Fi when they hit the button, or like when they hit the button, if it's like no connection, it doesn't go away. Like, they can just try again when they get back to a connection state.
Here's the thing that I love, because this is a thing that I see companies do a lot, is you haven't added offline yet,
right?
You're thinking about it.
Yeah, I made a plan to be able to if I wanted to.
Right. But a lot of companies will just be like, hey, we need this out of the box. And they don't understand the amount of engineering that has to go into these things, right? Like, even when you're like, let's say we're not rolling our own, but we are doing, we're just going to do data syncing, like straight data syncing, which is what I usually suggest. But then you start thinking about, what about deletes?
Yep.
If I delete it on the server, if I'm in a multi-user environment, what happens if something that, like a work order? I love this one because this is common, right? So I have work that I'm assigned to do, but what happens if my manager decides, no, Alan's not going to do it anymore? So I come up from the basement to go do this log. So I don't have access to the information because I shouldn't see what everybody else is working on.
Right.
But that work order's been removed from me. So the data won't pull anymore. So it means I have to pull different data to actually get it off my phone. So deletes and updates like that.
Yep.
And again, we're talking about a security level model. It's completely different. And a lot of companies don't think about, well, it's a delete. Just remove it from the device.
Yeah, just
get rid
of it. But
it's not that easy. Because the normal tactic, right, is to just say, get me everything since the last time I got data, right? So your phone will say, well, I got data 2 hours ago. So give me everything that's done since. But what it's not going to do is it's going to be like, well, you don't have that assigned anymore, because hopefully your query is smart enough to keep those things that I shouldn't see from being sent to me. Some don't. And I've seen a lot of that too. Where they're like,
yeah,
it's a good thing I don't see this data moving, because you're sending me a lot of stuff that I shouldn't see. I've seen financials move across a wire.
Oh,
and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, didn't think that one through. Well, deletes was, you know, one of the things that I did have to think about a little bit. And what I ended up doing with it, because again, like, you could delete it on one device, right? And that would sync up to the cloud. But like you're saying, how do I know on the other device that should go away now? So I don't know if I love this in hindsight so much. But I basically, you know, made another type of record, which is a delete record, which says, you know, this other record identifier should be deleted. And so I sync those down and then I process through those as well.
So, and that's smart. But it, like I said, even with updates, right? So something as simple as being updated and removed from me now has to still trigger up to me somehow. So you end up with all these extra events, right? So it's either you end up rolling, you end up doing like replication model, right? Yep. Like a data, like truly like a database. And that has its ups and downs too, because now it's like, well, no, then that allows the API to, for me to kind of free flow updates of any column through, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I generally tend to say, just write your APIs, man.
Yeah.
Just write them. And then if, for instance, if you're doing something that you shouldn't be, have the API error out, you could signal right there, right? When your data goes to sync and say,
yeah,
you know, here's a toast message. Yeah, this work order that you tried to complete, your manager must have already done it for you. So yeah,
it's no longer assigned to you.
Maybe it removes it from your device. Maybe it lets you know, or maybe it tells you, no, you need to add some, how long did it take you, or something.
Right.
Right. But that's, it's all business decision. Writing an abstract for that is, I don't want to say it's impossible, but I have yet to see it succeed.
But it's heavy, right? It's a lot of work. And then like to understand the inner workings so that you do the kind of other parts of the implementation using that correctly is hard. So
exactly.
That, like in this case, so my simple, you know, the simple thing turned into, okay, I have like three record types, like just always ask the server and say like the one I have, the newest thing that I have locally, the newest timestamp for like any changes for this, for a log, is this timestamp. And that timestamp isn't a local thing. It's on the record data that came from the server, right? So it's all, you know, the server is the only thing that ever says, here's a timestamp on a record. And so I get that information down and I just say, for logs, here's the newest timestamp I have. Like, give me anything that's changed since then. And then the server's like, oh, well, there's these other logs. And then there's these delete records as well. So go take these and update yourself. And you should be, you know, perfectly current in your state of data.
And see, that's, again, another great model. You didn't have to invest too much down on that.
Yeah.
And it just, it's going to work, and it works for your business.
And the code is easy for it. It's really not hard.
It's not in that case. But like I said, there's so many, as soon as you start to break out of that, what about parent child, right? So
yeah,
you start, okay, well, I deleted the parent. So then you now have to deal with all the children. Do you let the database do that? Do you have code that does that? Again, and you don't necessarily know what the developers built, because a lot of the times these things might be built after. They're like, oh yeah, we need offline. Well, you probably should have ramped up to be prepared for that.
Right.
To know these ins and outs. So that's why we're calling it end scars. So it's tactic end scars, right?
Yeah.
So you deleted the parent or reassigned it or whatever the heck you did. Now you got to get all that child data off my device because, one, I probably shouldn't have it. Maybe it was assigned to me wrong. And now I can see all the bonuses for everybody else going out. It's like I'm using terms I've seen, right? Hint, hint. Right? Maybe I shouldn't see those. Maybe it was should have been a manager that got that data, right? So they should be clearing off my device too. Because, you know, it's easy to pull a SQLite database off a rooted phone.
Yeah. Just, no, it's not hard to do. So yeah. No sensitive data there either, right?
Right.
And so like the another aspect of this, I mean, I guess backing up a step, you know, I think we kind of glossed over a bit, maybe you mentioned it, but like the easiest way, of course, to do this all is just to not do it.
Just to not do it, right? You can, I'd say pull your data or cache it for the stuff that you're reading actively, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second you're online, you know, you're looking at your cache data and it goes, oh, you're online. You haven't pulled data in 5 minutes. Let's try and get it. You're looking at the cache data and when it refreshes, we'll tell the user, hey, you got new data. But you've done the good thing is that the creates, the updates, like any actionable thing that the server needs to be aware of, you tell them simply, hey, no, you know, block the button or put a nice toast, or I call it a toast, a banner. Put a nice banner that says, hey, you know, your phone sucks, or you're, you know, welcome to Leamington where there is no cellular internet, right?
Yeah.
sorry, I had to do that to you. It's all right, John's got enough Wi-Fi in his house to
support
the entire city.
Exactly.
Everywhere. So you know, it just those kind of things help the user know, hey, you know, this isn't working well because you're not online.
Well, and I know you're a fan of doing that in your apps a lot too, right? Like you do a lot of I guess monitoring of connection state to kind of update your app UI and that kind of thing.
Not so much the app UI, but it's simple things, right? So if you're doing, a lot of people take pictures, right? Like it's very common in an app to take a photo or a video or something, right? Like even, does Google Maps take photos?
So this is another thing where I like, you know, when I first did this, I'm like, oh yeah, I should make it so you can take photos. Like, what if you want to log, you know, that you did some maintenance or whatever, and you want to attach a photo with it, which would be really cool. And something that I, you know, kind of thought, yeah, I'll get to that, but I haven't yet. And, you know, there's been a few people here and there that have been like, oh, it'd be nice if I could do this. But I'm like, I don't know. It's not in demand. So like, why build it out before you need it again? Right.
I guess I've worked with enough apps where they tend to take photos, in which case photos are going to be served back, right? So they're going to and from the server. So one of the things I generally tend to see is, you know, people take the photo, they hit, you know, save it. But I don't know about you. I know you've got the iPhone 15. How big are the photos?
Oh, geez. At the largest? Oh, I mean, they just, I don't even know anymore. Probably 15 megs or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, people just, we kind of take LTE for advantage, you know, we take advantage of it. It's fast, but it's not fast enough that I can press save, swipe my app away and, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
It needs a minute.
Yeah. So, and then what generally tends to happen there is that the developers might make the mistake of shipping that JSON with the image or vice versa, right? They ship one without the other. And then somewhere in there, the user swiped away their phone or LTE died or who knows, right? And all of a sudden that request that was to save that log just went.
Yeah. Well, and if you didn't, and then if you didn't cache it somewhere that you can retry from, like it's just lost, right?
Hopefully you try catching. You were able to display a pop-up saying, yeah, you know, we think internet died or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Otherwise, you know, that thing is just gone in the wind. Maybe your app crashed. If you hit the pop-up, you know, and you said okay, and you hit submit again, okay, you might get lucky. You might. And if the user has to come in and do it again, whatever. If the app totally went to sleep and silenced itself and they had backgrounded the error, it's just going to restart the app because it's been asleep so long.
Yeah.
And off that goes. So it's dead. The data is gone. And in some cases, if you haven't done it right, they may not even know. Right. That's the scary part about it. So I've had it. So now it's a shiny thing. There's a shiny HTTP transfers. It just uses some background services and stuff to make sure that photo goes into a queue, maybe some JSON data, and it'll push or pull. So we're uploading or downloading. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to say, as soon as you got internet, start pushing. If there's a hiccup or something that's not server related, it's just going to try it again or resume it later. Right. So people don't realize they need that. And it's a really underused library. I use it a lot because I know I need it, but this happens so often. I don't even think people realize that it's a bad problem. Right. And
I've been avoiding doing it for my stuff. Like so right now, you know, I basically, like I said, if you're saving something, luckily for me, like the record size is tiny. So it's,
you don't have to worry at 8K, right?
No, exactly.
It's going to fail right there. You can at least put a loading up in their face.
Yep. Yep.
But if it's not saving within like 2 or 3 seconds and you don't specifically say, user, please keep the phone open, which is a little bit lame. That's a bit.
No, I made the most like annoying message. So like I do the loading thing, right? I have a thing that's blocking the app from interacting until something happens. Either it fails or it goes through. And then if it fails, probably the worst thing I've done in building an app is I have the most generic message that's supposed to be like kind of silly, right? Like, what does it say exactly? It's like, Your phone seems to have gone swimming or something. Like it's something really just terrible, right? Like check your connection and try again. Like clear the water out of your phone.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's not bad. Hey?
But at least like it's okay. I know it didn't work, right? So I can at least either try again or not be like thinking, oh, it's great, I'm good, and nothing happened.
But see that'll still like it's 8K. At the very 8K is huge, actually. That's like still a Word doc, right? Like a page.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like that's bigger than my most records would be, like, you know, 1 or 2 kilobytes, maybe. Because it's not even JSON. Well, is it? Yeah, I send up JSON.
So it's going to clear quick.
Yeah.
It's going to clear fast enough that you can put that thing up there. Users generally know, let's give it a few seconds, right? But if you're uploading 15 megs, it's not going to be a few seconds. It's going to be more like a minute. They're not going to wait. They're going to think your app took a dump.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something's not working. And believe it or not, sending a progress on an upload or a download, that there's nothing really out of the box, right? You have to kind of plan for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they might not want to wait. So just put it in a background queue and let it go.
So what other, like we've talked about rolling your own, and I know that's, I think both of us are on the same page there. That's generally the preferred mechanism. Have you looked at other, you know, kind of abstractions or implementations lately?
There's, you know, there's one that's been floating around for years. I think it kind of came and then it died and then it came back, was Azure Mobile Apps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, it's a good attempt.
Hey, that was around when I was choosing like between Realm and stuff. And I did try it out then. You know, I don't, in like full disclosure, this is just my own personal stuff I was using it with, right? I had some issues with it, and maybe it was me not understanding how to properly implement some of the conflict resolution stuff. But like, I got to points where I had like local data loss in trying to sync things. And at some point I'm like, this has been a lot of work. I don't want to keep down this path. I'm not being successful with it, you know? And then I think I saw Realm and that looked like, oh, it's going to solve all my problems.
Lo and behold.
Right. So I kind of abandoned that. I haven't looked at it in recent years. I know it's gotten, you know, a few, this was like maybe not even fair to call the same thing, because I think it was like the Azure, like the mobile table service, or there was like a related Azure service paired to this at one point, the thing that I used anyway. So I don't know if this is exactly the same or not, or if this is like the evolution of that.
Well, Azure Mobile Services does require that you, I'm pretty sure it uses OData under the hood.
Okay.
It does have, like, you had to do your controllers a certain way. It did allow you to do some filtering and stuff, so that was good. It did allow you to manage batches and stuff, like some good attempts. But again, it took over everything. Like, you had to give it authentication control because mm-hmm. it was going to, you know, what if it had to renew data? Which is another thing. What if you have to renew your access token while you're getting ready to sync? And like, it goes on and on and on, right? So
yeah,
this thing really, it kind of took over that entire layer, like front to back, how data was queried, how it moved between the devices. And you were like, you had no say in it anymore. You could call push and you could call pull. That was about it. And have fun. Hopefully it worked.
Yeah. And then even, like I said, understanding like how the conflict resolution stuff worked, because like maybe the default out of the box was kind of like first, you know, first one wins or something like that.
Yep.
But that was, I forget, when I was looking at it, I thought, no, the default thing isn't going to work for me, cause I have, you know, this whatever case. And then going into that, you know, down that rabbit hole of trying to understand how their implementation worked and how to actually use it and do what I want, make it do what I want to do. Wasn't that easy either. Right. Like it required work. I'm not saying they did a bad job of it. It's just, it's another concept to learn of another product.
Right. And it's also hard for them to account for all the possible variables. So yeah, this thing doesn't work in the background, right? So it's, you had to call push and pull.
Right.
But
which you could then do in the background, right? Like you could set up a background job and do that all yourself.
You can do a worker process from Android. You can mm-hmm. do a BG task in iOS. You can use Shiny Jobs. Doesn't matter. Right. It's, you still had to do that code. Fine. But the problem is you stopped losing concept of what had synced and what hadn't. So the other problems that tend to happen is, let's say I pull from a Delta, but my app hasn't run in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden there's this wad of data, right? So generally people say, well, give me everything since that. All right, here's your 2000 records. Enjoy, right? You don't know, like your phone can say, okay, give me all 2000, try and save it. It backgrounds, it fails to store. What's going to happen the next time it syncs?
Yeah.
So I never saved it. So my last successful sync was 2 days ago. Well, I don't realize it failed. So now it's 3 days. All right, here's your 30,000 records. Enjoy. Right. So it's thing again, you had to start working on streaming data. And so it didn't become just a Delta. It became a, where am I in the motion of data? Right.
Yeah.
And Azure didn't do that, and a lot of people didn't realize that it couldn't do that. I don't know if it does it now. I did see it not do it then. Same with push. Right now, push is a little bit easier, but people would be like, okay, well, I'm pushing data. I should know if it fails. Okay, great. What happens if you push a batch and the server's stupid and doesn't do it in a transaction, which, yes, I have seen. Right? So two passed, eight failed. So which two passed, which eight failed? Right? Do I know? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
You could assume probably all of them failed, but then the next time I got to keep sending these batches, right? So it's just the problems go on and on and on. And that's why I tell people just stop using frameworks and really, then that way you can control your own destiny as you go, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then that you have the flexibility too of like one of the other things that I have had run up against, you know, one was like, yeah, if I was using Realm, it was, I have to use their library in my app. And then you start, you know, this is me again. And like you said, origin story, maybe this is where it comes from. It's like, oh, well, what happens when I, you know, when they're not updating their thing to work with the newer version of something that I need it to work with. Like, I think back in those days, there was something a few times that they're like, oh, there's a new version of Xamarin or something. And I was waiting on them to update their stuff to work with it because there's some change, right? So you run into those situations where you're kind of not able to choose your own destiny in terms of what's running on the device and on mobile. But even then with my own solution, you know, I started down the path and for years I was using LightDB in the app for the local, you know, offline storage. And that worked pretty well. I was quite a big fan of it, actually. And the reason I chose it mostly was because my objects aren't complicated, but there is a little bit of nesting in them. And because I'm using Cosmos, like Cosmos is a you know, more document DB style database, right?
You're so like when documents.
So when I stored like a log, like I said, sometimes I'll try and capture the local weather conditions and I attach that to the log. And rather than doing that relationally, like having a, you know, weather record in another table that was related back to the log table, I'm just like, no, like I'm only using this information together.
Right here.
So yeah. Like just put it all in one document and then I pull it back out. So LightDB made that easy because it was more document oriented too. But eventually when I started doing the switch to MAUI, there's differences in the runtime and there were some issues earlier on with like AOT compilation of stuff that I was using with LightDB. And then I had to do all this work to make it skip over AOT, you know, certain assemblies. And then I lost some startup performance and stuff as like, it kind of spiraled. And then finally, like, okay, at least because I built my own solution here, I can move over to something else. And I did. I moved over to SQLite and I'm, you know, reasonably successful and happy there right now. So like, that's another part of it too, right? If you control the pieces when you need to shift them around, you're not like prevented from doing so. It's kind of nice. It's free.
And SQLite's not going anywhere, right? It's been...
No, for sure.
It's probably the most tried and tested, like tried and true all the way through.
Yep. I avoided it at first kind of because like anytime you bring like a native, you know, thing into your app, I'm going to say there's problems. Obviously it works, but there's the potential for it complications in like builds and linking and stuff. Although yeah, SQLite's been such a, like you said, it's such a mainstay that kind of stuff is all figured out anyway. So it really isn't a problem. But the other part of it was like avoiding one. I used to be a DBA. So this is also what hurt me too.
Going back.
So I know how to write SQL, but like, I don't want to write SQL. Like I'm not a DBA anymore for a reason. It's not what I want to be doing. So I'm like, I liked LightDB because I didn't have to do any of that. And so SQLite, and I know there's ORMs and stuff. And I did actually start trying to use Frank's, you know, very popular SQLNet Lite, whatever thing's called.
You avoided that. I didn't even know you went straight SQL.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, come on. Who are you talking to?
Yeah, man, I would have been making fun of you then. You never told me that, though. You didn't tell me on purpose. I know you didn't.
I think I did. No.
No, you didn't.
I started using that, but I think, what was it? There was something in how I had to, like, I ran into something where I would have needed to make my objects derive from an interface or a type that he had. I forgot there was something
to put attributes on it. You didn't
want I didn't want the attributes.
There we go. Okay.
And then I started looking. I'm like, can I change his thing up so that I don't need to do that? I'm like, yeah, I could. But then I'm like, well, why don't I just write the SQL myself raw?
I do wish that there was external mapping, right? So that the
attributes
were a little bit left alone. I'm not a fan of attributes too. It triggers my OCD, I guess, in code, but.
That was the thing, because I share that set of objects with like my server stuff too, right? So I'm like, I don't really want this leaking into that part of it. And like, well, I don't know. I didn't want to do it.
Your EDDs are coming after you, John. They're coming.
That's fine. Forks. That's fine.
Fire.
So I ended up, I actually I went super low level. I'm just trying to scan through here and maybe one day I'll figure out screen sharing so I can show this kind of stuff. I wrote my own stuff for like doing the super raw API, like SQLite net, like, oh no, did I, maybe I did go, okay. I didn't go that bad. I went SQLite connection. I went with the Microsoft data SQLite API.
Thank goodness you used at least an ADO.NET.
I started trying to just use like the really ugly SQLite net or SQLite.
Well, that's API. The low level stuff.
Yeah.
The actual.
Like the statement prep and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. I don't think people realize how much ADO.NET really actually did for you, and ADO in general. But
and it was kind of felt familiar back to my days of writing, like, you know, ASP.
You did not write it like that. Come on, you did not.
The SQL, for some stuff. I made websites back in the day like that. I eventually used ORMs, but, you know, early on, I did like the ADODB. The readers and all that fun stuff.
Thank goodness we've evolved.
So I did arrive eventually at SQLite, and the thing that kind of saved me, like I said, because I wanted to do documents, was the JSON support with SQLite, which is pretty sweet. I don't know if you've used stuff there.
Oh, I do remember that now.
It's nice.
I can't pretend like you hid it from me then, because I do remember we had that conversation.
Yeah, so like you can create a table that has... it's just the JSON column, right? So like all my object is stored there, but then you create these sort of like meta or pseudo or calculated columns, I guess. And so I'll have like the few that I care about on the log document, right? Like I said, everyone has a timestamp, the pool that it's associated with, and then like the type of log that it is. So I have these calculated columns that are like, pool ID text as, you know, JSON extract from the JSON value column, then you give it like the path, like the JSON path specifier, right? Like $.pool ID, which is like the path where that value is stored. And it's great. It works perfectly. Love it.
That makes sense. I do remember that conversation now.
And you can create indexes on those calculated columns too, which was wonderful. So I have all that SQL just written out, you know,
it's
lovely
like
in a file.
You just have to go against the grain, don't you?
Yeah.
You just had to.
But it's been working excellent. It's been way faster than LightDB was, mostly, you know, in like startup times and stuff too.
Which that's weird because LightDB was apparently known for being like massively, massively huge.
Like huge?
Like fast.
Oh, okay.
It was known for being a document DB that was mega fast.
It was really the initialization. Like, so, one, because it wouldn't, there was some bug in the runtime where it didn't know how to AOT what I was doing. So like that was that thing. And that made me make it just be like JIT, you know, or like interpreted mode for that assembly on iOS. Right. And on Android, of course.
And that triggered you.
That did actually show up in like SpeedScope logs. So like we were trying to like look at app startup time with like, you know, some real world apps. And I'm like, well, then my app is a real world app because it's in the world and it's real. And so we did some scanning of that, and like LightDB continually kept showing up as like the biggest bottleneck in startup time for me. So hopefully that's fixed.
Well, if you're happy with your SQLite JSON stuff anyways, what difference?
Yeah, exactly.
And you wrote SQL again.
I wrote SQL again. It did kind of like, you know, again, it's like all of these things that we do that were like, is it Stockholm syndrome or is it, you know, do I really like it? Like same with MS Build, right? Like, oh, it was kind of fun.
I'll use a lot of NDD framework myself on the server. I have no problems there. I can identify where things are going to go wrong, and I'll still go back to, you know, some hardcore SQL, because all the kids these days are like, we'll use NDD framework, and they've got their ways of doing it. They want to pull out JSON, and I'm like, no, here's how you do cross joins and some clever sub selects and stuff. And they're like, I don't like the SQL stuff. And I'm like, well,
yeah.
This is how you do it, man. Unless you want, you know, your queries to take 6 hours, this is how you do it in 6 seconds.
Yeah. And you're not using entity framework on your mobile app, right?
No, so exactly. But, and you can still do that complicated SQL if you have to, which I have. So that's why I'm good with SQL.
Yeah.
Well, even to date.
No, it wasn't bad.
Now, have you ever had to do other offline stuff? You know what? We should probably save that for another episode. So that's another episode.
Oh, now I'm kind of curious, though.
Oh, well, like doing stuff where you don't have internet. How do you work with other devices?
Oh, interesting. Like device-to-device communication.
Right.
I did a long time ago. I think I had even did a talk on it at one of the Evolve conferences. There was Google had this thing like an SDK for like nearby communication. I know they still do, and they have like different stuff around it, but this was like early days of it, and I did something with that, and that was kind of cool, where you could like have the app running on two devices and it would talk to each other some way. I don't know. That's like my only real experience.
I've had to do one. I did a POC on it. We didn't actually get this to production, but there was a case for two or three companies, something like that, where there was no internet. They were up in the air, or they were at some, you know, site where it was like way off in the boonies, where cell towers were not
even an access point that they could, like, because, I mean, if that's the classic thing, right? If you have no internet connection, maybe you still have like a local Wi-Fi
hub. If we go back to when the time frame when this was, there, like, Wi-Fi is on every plane now practically, right? Because they've got the satellites to deal with it. Like, that infrastructure wasn't there.
And I guess, like,
back to, even as far as 5 years ago.
Yeah, true. And you couldn't just, you know, obviously for many regulation reasons, I'm sure, just be like, well, just throw an access point in the plane.
Oh God, that is such nonsense. If it takes Wi-Fi to interrupt transmissions, we got problems, man.
That's the oldest
urban myth that they try and do on flights.
Yeah. Airplane mode, turn off your Bluetooth
headset. I'm sure they don't want any interference, and I'm sure it causes a little bit. But if it really causes that much, I really don't want to fly in a plane.
Yeah,
I really don't. It's nonsense that it blocks it. Operate on a different frequency, man.
Yeah, exactly. But still, you wouldn't have been able to actually, you know, do that for those reasons, I would assume.
Right. So they had like these pay terminals where they had to sync data to make sure like this customer purchased that in that seat, etc. And they didn't have a Wi-Fi terminal. This was more than 5 years ago now, but we had to do something like a peer-to-peer network. But this became my POC.
So,
and they never implemented it, but they wanted credit card data, right? So if I on terminal A, I made a purchase, and then the customer goes, well, the sandwich tasted like junk, which, let's face it, that's most airplanes.
Yeah.
You're getting a sandwich that's cooked.
Yeah, like you knew what you were buying. Come on.
It was nuked 5 hours ago, man. Like you're eating.
It's like, it tastes terrible. I want a refund. All I have left is one bite.
Yeah, which it happened, man. It was like a prime use case. Like, it sounds funny, but it was a prime.
So is that, I was just going to ask, like, well, why did you have to, like, why, if it was offline anyway, like, it's presumably storing up the credit card info so that it can sync up later on the ground.
Right. So it would do that.
So you needed to communicate because there might be several terminals around the plane being used, and no matter where they wanted to, like, get a refund from, you needed
exactly
any of them to work.
Because they'd have, like, on the big airliners, right, the ones with multi-rows.
Yeah.
Right. So if you had two rows, they might not know the cart that they had down there, because you'd think they were a bit more organized, but they really weren't, right? So what had to happen is these terminals, they were always on, thankfully, is they'd be looking for each other, right? And just start syncing data through BLE. Because again, Android, they'd have Android for the cheap ones, and then some of them would have tablets, right? So you might even have one that gave it to a customer and said, here, order on this tablet.
Right.
Can I tell you? No, no, you got to order on there and then use your credit card. Oh, for crying out loud. Fine. Right. So you would do this, and the terminal, of course, had a tap,
mm-hmm.
and it would put that in. But again, that data, including credit card,
yeah,
would fly over. Now it was encrypted, but I mean, how encrypted could it be? Encrypted enough. Let's put it that way. Nobody's scanning Bluetooth up.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, and if you are, like, realistically, how are you going to know how to decipher that if you did any reasonable amount of encryption?
And I mean, it's the funny thing about Bluetooth up there is it kind of, I don't know, the way it would connect would sometimes, even though you were side by side, it would take time.
Yeah.
It's weird. The signals aren't working the same way that they do on the ground. Let's put it that way. So these devices would get beside each other and go, hey, I know you. Hey, I know you too. Here's my stuff. Give me your stuff. And they would trade. And so when somebody gave back one of those disgusting sandwiches or the one bite,
yeah,
they'd be like, yeah, I can refund you if they had been in range. So that's why it never fully took off to production, because some people would be like, I paid for it. Then they'd give you the product and you'd be like, the hell is this?
So
did somebody eat this once already? I don't want this.
You know, I'm just thinking now, I mean, we've missed this opportunity because now everything is Wi-Fi. And I would imagine that most of these terminals are actually connecting now to the ground. But does that mean I could have like brought along with me a card that I had like already had deactivated and just use that?
There was also the potential for that.
Yep.
Because
how would you know?
You wouldn't. Right. So
other than like the name, I guess they could try and go after you. But like for the amount of money, it probably would be. Would they do that? I don't know.
You're figuring out. These were the problems. Right. So it did happen. There was lots of. How would you know? Right. You wouldn't.
Oh, I mean, that reminds me. I know we're running up on the clock here, but there used to be when I would fly for Xamarin Days for travel. I don't know if it was just one airline or multiple. There was a way that you could, so like you'd get the Wi-Fi, right? And then you'd have to pay to like get internet access. But the way that they had it set up, it was all like the captive portal and like you're connected to the internet, but you're not through their paywall, but you still need to be able to get, you know, to their paywall to pay to get there. So anyway, if you set up like a proxy server and you had it running on the right ports that they allowed some ports through always, you could do like the whole reverse tunnel. And I always had free Wi-Fi on the planes because I was reverse tunneling home into my machine that was sitting here waiting for it.
The networking hardware's gotten a little bit more sophisticated since, thankfully, but
That was,
and it wasn't
fun.
Really, it still sucks up in the air though. The Wi-Fi still sucks.
It's not
imagine
that bad.
Syncing data. If you're syncing data up there, you want to have a good background experience. Don't do something crazy with frameworks, because if you're in the air, let me tell you, it's going to suck. Even they have the expensive internet option now up in the air. I fly enough still that I see it and you're like, it's cheaper now. It's like $10 for
it's not that bad.
You're like, you can have the $25 version and watch Netflix. I'm like, but I can watch Netflix on the plane. Anyhow, you know, that $25 doesn't get you that much more. It still sucks.
Yeah,
like, great. I can watch it in, you know, 320p now. Great.
Right. And then like, you know, every once in a while it's going to cut out because, you know, the signal cuts out and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good environment to test your offline stuff on.
I mean, you could just test on the emulator and say,
wow, what fun is that?
Oh, well, I guess if you don't want to leave your house, but I want to leave my house. I do like going.
Exactly.
I want to fly in a plane. All right, John, I can see you're flipping the library of the week, which I changed on us because I thought this was more appropriate.
Yeah, no, I like it. So what did you pick?
I picked SQLite-PCL-net.
Sure.
Frank,
I think that's it.
Frank's library. I always get the two mixed. Is it .net-PCL? I think it's PCL-net.
SQLite-net. I think it's SQLite-net-PCL.
If you type them in some order, it'll come up.
Yeah. Right? I mean, if you type in like SQLite and MAUI or Xamarin or whatever, it's going to come up because that's like the de facto thing that people use, I think, right?
Well, it's got the things that I like about it and why I mean, I'll still use the Microsoft version because it's ADO.net if you need it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's the
I want to throw an honorable mention in there too, right? Because SQLite Net is cool, is great, but it all of these and also the Microsoft data. What is the thing called? I just said it before.
The Microsoft SQLite. Yep.
It also sits on top of the SQLite raw or whatever the green. I don't know the right name to call it, but that's Eric, whose last name. Yes, thank you.
He is the godfather of SQLite.
Right. And all of this, you know, is possible because that thing has been built and is maintained and updated too. And I know like that, you know, early on Maui, you know, .NET 6 days, I think it needed some work from him to get things back up and going too. And that obviously happened, which is great. But yeah, that's a big foundational piece of a lot of this too.
So. Actually, it's good you called that one out because he really is the godfather. As much as Frank gives credit.
Yeah, yeah. Frank put a nice layer on top, right?
But like this thing sits everywhere. If you have SQLite on your device, you need to give the godfather his due.
Yeah. Like that's one that like if we're talking open source, like everybody owes him a beer for sure.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
So but that
Frank's library does have a couple nice things on it, besides being an ORM.
Yep.
It doesn't do parent child stuff. That's fine. Doesn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing parent child, you don't really whatever. But it does do stuff like table updates, which is a big one, right? So if you've got a model and you say create me the table.
Yeah.
If you change your model and you create table again, it'll update the database, which is that's
a whole other part of
it.
All
it
of that,
sounds
right?
Like, oh well, that's not a big deal. All the kids are going, yeah, yeah, we could do that any frame.
Migrations,
can
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, migration. Don't get started on my
yeah.
Game, but
I've been fortunate that for my app, I just if I do change that, I because again, I'm only using mine really as like a local cache, right? Like anytime if I create a record, it goes first it goes to the server, and only after it goes to the server and is good there does it come back from that request and then get saved locally, right? So I'm never writing to the database locally before I know it's in the server. So it's all read only basically. And so if I change stuff, I'm just like, just blow it away and create it again. Sync
well,
the data.
I mean, his is got the ability. So it's going to do the create columns.
Yeah.
The drop columns. It does that all seamlessly, which means you don't have to track the version of the database. Just say, here's my model now. I don't care what it was. Here it is now. It'll drop the column, create the new ones.
But also like, you know, and that is lovely that it does that. But that, I think, you know, the whole migration thing is another good reason to, you know, consider using the JSON stuff in SQLite even too, right? Because you can, no, but like really, you store a document, you can add whatever you want to it, and you don't have to necessarily change your table.
That's true. Turn it into a SQLite becomes
documentation. That's what it is. That's how I'm using it.
I think the only thing we found that SQLite didn't do, and this was something you and I were working on for the longest time, was the true geocalculations.
Yeah.
Getting that extension over
was not easy because it's not because Eric didn't put it in the box, you know, which he already put a bunch dealt with a bunch of them. So
SQLite, the raw, the lowest level, the C SQLite has that. Some of that stuff in the box, but it doesn't have the extension for the real hardcore stuff. Now there's other companies out there, which we won't go into, that do maps and stuff, and they have their own thing on top that does geo.
Yeah. Cause we were trying to like search by geo, right? Like radius of.
Yeah. We were doing some crazy stuff. Right? And I think we got it working on one platform, and then the other, I was like, I give up. I give up for now. We'll come back to this. But it was awesome. It SQLite can bolt these things on if you need to. It wasn't out of the box. We had to do that work.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think, you know, that was a really cathartic episode for me. So thanks everyone for listening to, you know, our troubles and rants and raves and all of the wounds that we have.
Do you need a beer after that?
It is Friday. We're recording actually today on Friday. So yeah, I think that's about that time of day.
You're reliving a nightmare, though.
Yeah. So, you know, while we go and fetch a beer for our Fridays, it would be great if you're listening, and it was also Friday for you when you hear this probably, that you would go and use that Friday afternoon and evening to leave us a review on the Apple Podcasts app. That'd be great. Appreciate it always. And if you have
this never end.
Jeez. I mean, it's just like really corny segues. So that's
good. No, it's good. It's good.
And if you have feedback, comments, questions, whatever, if you want to complain about the jokes, or if you have even worse jokes, gonemobile.io, drop us a line and we'll probably see if we can get those bad jokes on a future episode. See, I'm expanding now. I'm asking not for just questions and comments, but also jokes.
I don't know. That's opening. Yeah, that's opening the floodgates, but we'll see.
All right. Well, we get to moderate them anyway coming in, right?
That's true.
All right, Alan. Have a good weekend. Thank you all for listening. See you next time.
See you, everybody.